Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to What Culture Gaming. We are the News Lads and this is the News Lads. I'm Scott Tailford, joined by Mr. Josh Brown.
Hello Scott Tailford, I love that we're making this a thing. Just an off-the-cuff joke and now that's the title of the podcast.
It's the News Lads, mate. And there's also, this is the News Lads. Sadly, there isn't any Geordie Jim this week. Geordie Jim on the Sony side hasn't done any up-to-date quotes, but the second he launches in with anything relating to PlayStation, we'll put it in, mate, because you know, whatever he says is going to read in. Anyway, we thought we'd do another news roundup because it's a Monday. And there's quite a few things on here. Some stuff from a few days ago, some stuff breaking as we record this. So we're going to start with the fact that the PS5 is outselling Xbox Series consoles 2-1. There's quite a bit of data for this. The source is Video Games Chronicle, and they've been told that the PS5 has outsold the PS4 in the UK and worldwide. The PlayStation 4 sold 250,000 units in its first 48 hours back in 2013. So if the PS5 has beaten that, then it does beat the already announced Xbox Series data, which the combined Xbox Series S and X sales are 155,000 units in the UK for the 48 hours, and 1.1 million to 1.4 million units worldwide, which is that's across 2 weeks. That's across the 48-hour period or whatever, but that's still a hell of a lot less than what the PS4 did back in 2013, where its worldwide sales were 2.1 million units. Either way you slice it, the Xbox stuff is coming in at half of the PlayStation side. What do you think?
Well, for one, Scott, obviously it's really good for Sony and that they've managed to keep the momentum of the PlayStation 4. Because I remember like when that came out and that sort of beat everyone's expectations and everyone was kind of wondering if it was a fluke, whether or not we'd have the same desire for a console that we had back for the PlayStation 4. And obviously the PlayStation 5, even if it might arguably have less of a, you know, push around the launch lineup and stuff like that, it's still obviously sold really well. The desire for consoles is still there. I just don't think we should necessarily sniff at what Microsoft's managed to achieve, you know, considering that they, sort of turned the tide in public perception, considering that they pretty much have no launch games like that you buy a console
not
for.
Not pretty much. They do not have any new launch games.
Yeah, they've got no launch games and they still managed to outsell the Xbox One, which, is pretty admirable. And that still sold decently back in the day. It obviously looks bad when you put it directly next to Sony and you see like the 2-1 comparison, but it's still interesting. What popped me about this list was that in the UK, the Xbox Series X and the Xbox One were outperformed by the PSP. The PSP sold 185,000.
The PSP, mate, was a beautiful, beautiful thing. Sadly, the Vita's not even on this list. Basically, VGC, Video Game Chronicle, brought together various other console launches. All of this specific data I'm about to read out is for the first 48 hours only in the UK. The PSP, the original PSP, did 185,000 units versus the Xbox One did 150,000 units. And like we said before, Xbox Series consoles combined have done 155,000 units. So yeah, I mean, I love the PSP. I love the Vita more, but the Vita didn't even chart on this thing. So either it didn't break the 40,000 units of the Wii U, or Mr. VGC doesn't even want to include it. on the run.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we just, as a culture, pretend that the Vita didn't happen. Like, Sony's well up for that. Like, they could just leave it, their legacy being the PSP in the PSP Go, whatever it was called, the mini version of it. I
think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Fine with that. It is, yeah, like, I mean, it's mad, especially considering just how limited stock has been. Like, we were talking in the last podcast about how difficult it was to get a PlayStation or the Xbox and how many, like, users were waiting in a queue for one at the UK retailer Currys, for instance. 150,000 people just queuing to try to get this machine. So it's going to be interesting how Sony keeps up with that demand and whether how much longevity those sales have, because I wonder whether it you know, this rapid pace of sales persists into 2021 and then 2022, or if we're going to peak really early and then it peters out. I don't know. I'm not an analyst. That's not what I get paid for, Scott Tilford.
You're not an analyst, man, but we will dive in every week and attempt to be one together. I do wonder, like, do you think this is a ringing endorsement of exclusives, like as a reason to buy a new console? Because as someone who gets who has both now, I do love the Series X. Like, I think that I'm buying everything third party on the Xbox side. And when I'm going back into stuff, I bought Shadow Complex Remastered on the Xbox last night. Because I was going to go, and I saw that they did a tweet saying it works on PS5 now. And I was like, why would I buy it on PS5 when I can get the auto HDR, auto upscaling shenanigans on the Series X? So I think if you're, you know, investing in video games as a medium, you're going to go back to titles and stuff. The Xbox is just head and shoulders above that. Like, original Mass Effect, or the Mass Effect trilogy with auto HDR, and Titanfall 2 at 120 frames a second, mate, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I love that as a selling point, but the literal data is, and the marketing, the way that it was sort of rolled out was like, if you want new stuff, that's on PlayStation. It's not the auto up-res stuff. And obviously a 2-to-1 sales lead is kind of, do you think it's a ringing endorsement of the PlayStation brand, the exclusive stuff, the marketing? Like, why exactly do you think they've pulled ahead?
I think there's a lot to take into consideration. Obviously, exclusivity and what the consoles have to offer at launch is a big deal, because even though I love what Microsoft has done with Game Pass and backwards compatibility and stuff like that, the data for years has obviously pointed towards backwards compatibility itself not being like a system seller. There is a reason why both companies moved away from that for entire console generations and decided they didn't need it, because it's not the thing that pulls in unit sales. It's not the thing that pulls in fans or anything like that. It's, at the end of the day, it's the idea that you're getting something new, and PlayStation for the past few months has pitched itself as the one machine coming out at the end of this holiday that's going to give you something new. You're going to get a new UI, you're going to get a new look in the console, you're going to get a new experience in the dual sense, you're going to get exclusive games, you're going to get Astro, you're going to get Demon's Souls, even Spider-Man Miles Morales whilst it's on PlayStation 4. A lot of people have bought that for PlayStation 5, judging off the UK sales data. And that's the reason ultimately why I went for PlayStation over Microsoft as well, because I wanted this new experience. I know that I can get an Xbox Series X, hopefully, if the stock comes back in about 6 months and not really miss anything. There's going to be no games that I couldn't have played. There's going to be nothing like that. And I do think that's kind of why Sony has kind of pulled ahead. And there's obviously, you need to take into account that the UK historically has been a Sony branded country. Like, if you look at the sales data for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, it always seems to quite largely show that Sony outsells Microsoft in terms of consoles and kind of presence and, you know, it just presence in the public consciousness, I suppose. So that's nothing to be snuffed out either. They've spent decades now, like, maintaining that brand in the country and worldwide, obviously.
I'm fascinated by the whole exclusive thing. Like, at what point does the game, like, does gaming or access to gaming as a medium, what time does it, like, peter out? Like, are exclusives as important? Like, would you, it's that whole thing. Like, do you subscribe to Netflix for the originals, or do you subscribe for the body of content, the body of films that are there? Same with on the Amazon side or whatever. And, like, is that something that gaming is just, it's just going to meet out over time, where, like, exclusives, quote unquote, aren't as important? But like you said, it's obviously going to be a mix of all these things, the branding, the exclusives, the, like, the history of PlayStation versus the history of Xbox. There's so much more for Sony to cash in on, literally in this case. But I think, yeah, a 2-to-1 sales lead. I still think that it's pretty impressive for Xbox to come back so much. Like, there was that recent interview with Phil Spencer where he said they pretty much gave up on Xbox overall because the Xbox One was so disastrous. And he sort of, like, has spearheaded the whole revival resurrection movement after Don Matrick sort of drove it into the side of the side of a road. So I think like being able to bring it back and even being able to do a 2-to-1, you know, comeback or whatever is still pretty impressive anyway. On to the next thing though, and we covered this in a separate video so you can check out if you're on the pod feed, which you will be because this isn't a video. You can also listen to me and Josh doing our initial take on the Metal Gear Solid remake being true. But we're going to dive into that a little bit more. I've got a particular question I want to ask you, Mr. Josh Brown.
Ooh, I'm excited.
But so yeah, the Metal Gear Solid remake is apparently true. This comes from insider Moore's Law is Dead, who already confirmed God of War 2 was going to be real before that was announced. And also alongside this is that Silent Hills is apparently happening with Kojima and Konami reaching an agreement so that he can continue the work that he started back when he was at Konami. Both of these things have separate videos, separate discussions that we've already done on either the video side, or you can find them on the podcast feed. But still, as the overall talking point being that the Metal Gear Solid remake is happening, the like, additional details for that are that it's being developed by Bluepoint. It's been in development for 3 years. And the thing I was going to ask you is, do you think that Kojima will be involved at all? Because I was looking into, I remembered when we were doing this news this morning, and I don't know if you know, but the original Metal Gear Solid, the PS1 one, was translated by one guy. It was translated by this dude called Jeremy Blaustein. And he was literally sitting in an office in Konami, over in Japan, sorry, working for Konami, when they were thinking about, you know, translating it over to the West. And he just literally, like, you can read the whole thing. Polygon did a really great insider article on it. Well, they pretty much just asked the group, like, does anybody know any English? Can they translate it? And he was like, I do a little bit of Japanese and English. I can do that. And they just gave the whole script to him. And he did the whole thing. And so, like, that first game, the reason it's so westernized, there's so many, like, you know, like, action hero references and 80s action hero references and things like that. The reason it's the most grounded Metal Gear is because it's barely Kojima involved with the Western side of it, which I think is why Twin Snakes is way more Eastern and anime and stuff, and why Metal Gear Solid became so damn crazy after the first one. Because Kojima was, and that was after the first game, was the one when Kojima was like, I want full creative control. He made a whole bargain with Konami to say that he would have final say on everything. So all of that is to say, half an hour later, that I wonder if Kojima even cares about, you know, dipping his toes back into the original Metal Gear again.
I think, again, this is entirely like speculation of what I think will happen. I imagine that because he's so entrenched in the Sony ecosystem now, especially after Kojima Productions did Death Stranding, they're apparently doing a horror game, potentially Silent Hills with them. I feel like they'll get his name attached, but I don't think he'll be like actively involved with the production, at least just judging off how much he wants to be done with Metal Gear, you know what I mean? Like, I think they'll get his name value on as like a consultant or an executive producer to be like, look, this is author by the original creator. He's having some input, he's going to have some say on what's going on, you know what I mean? But whether or not he will be actually involved on the ground level, I doubt it. When it comes to the translation, that is really interesting because that piece is really interesting. But judging on what Bluepoint has recently done with Demon's Souls, which went back and retranslated the game, which actually changed a few minor things, but they sort of updated it so it was more authentic or whatever, I think that's probably what will happen to the original script on Metal Gear Solid. Like, I can't imagine it will change that much, but I do think we will see some differences from game to game.
Well, that was kind of the thing
online with the original,
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. Like, this Blaustein guy in the Polygon piece, like, he says, like, I haven't read this piece in, like, a few months or whatever, but I remember him saying, like, I added X reference to different stuff. I made, like, Snake sort of, like, it has a certain sense of swagger to him. Like, there's very, very much a different tone to the first Metal Gear, to Metal Gear Solid 2. But, like, another sort of thing to this question is, like, will Kojima want it to be a different way than the original one was? Like, does he want to remove all of Blaustein? Because this is the dude, for as much as everyone loves Hideo Kojima, and like, I'm a massive fan of him too, he's pretty cut and dry when it comes to what he wants and doesn't want. Like, literally kicked David Hayter to the curb for Metal Gear Solid 5. Didn't even let him know that they were doing Metal Gear Solid 5. And then he had to, like, and for Metal Gear 3, he had to re-audition as Big Boss. And it's like, Kojima's, like I said, he's pretty ruthless when it comes to what he wants. And, like, he was the dude that, like, got back involved with Twin Snakes and was kind of like, oh, this is how Metal Gear Solid 1 should have been. And I don't want that. I don't want a Metal Gear Solid 1 remake to be this stupid missile-flipping anime thing. And I love anime, but I don't want that for the first Metal Gear.
I think it's probably the trickiest remake there's potentially ever been so far. Like, you look at Resident Evil 2, while a lot of people love that original game, you can see how they got from that original kind of tank control approach to the updated remake that is more in line with Resident Evil 4, because there was already a template, and to a lot of people, Resident Evil is Resident Evil 4, so it makes sense for it to be adapted in that style, because there isn't kind of one consistent thing. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Metal Gear Solid 1, like, there have been so few updates of that game in particular. I know we've had, obviously, sequels and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's the hardest thing to try and imagine, because, you know, in the gaming space, there are very few auteurs or whatever, but Hideo Kojima definitely is one, and so mm-hmm. much of his directing style, so much of his personality is in that first game in particular, you know, translation errors or not, whatever, like the direction of the game, the look of the game, the feel of the game, it's like it comes from him and that team at the time and the artists and the talented people obviously on board. And I think trying to either replicate that or reimagine it or quote unquote update it for a modern audience is just a task that me personally, I would never want to have. I don't even know where I would even begin with that. It is so difficult, and you run the risk of pissing off so many different people that I think only a team like Blue Point could do it. I would trust very few other developers with this, but judging on their like past history, like we said, Demon's Souls, Shadow of the Colossus, even, you know, their hand in the HD upgrades for Metal Gear Solid 2, 3, Peace Walker and stuff like that. They know this franchise. They know the PlayStation legacy. If they get some input from Kojima, hopefully they can thread that needle, man, and do it justice.
I think I'm too indebted, because I said in the other video that we did that Metal Gear Solid is my favorite game of all time. If they change anything, really, I'm not
going to
like it.
They're going, pal.
Yeah, I know. And it's like a new camera angle. You change like a voice, the way like an inflection, the way someone delivers a line. Like I don't know if they can get it right, but I'll be amazed if they can.
As always, my ideal with like these remasters, remakes is to do something, you know, do something new, do a reimagining, do whatever, but also at the same time, package in a really faithful version of it, kind of like the Master Chief Collection does, when you can like switch between the modes. Do that and please everyone, maybe. I know that's a lot of hard work.
No, that's a really good point, because I mean, it depends how much work they do to it, whether it can run both games at the same time, I guess. But like, considering how much wireframe mesh stuff and literal game DNA Bluepoint bring across when they do their remake, like the original game in Demon's Souls case is running underneath all that stuff, so it's like you could like go between in that case. But yeah, maybe in Metal Gear, I don't know. I'm very terrified. I don't know. I'm kind of happy they're gonna do it, but I would just take a re-release of the original for me. But you never know. Either way, next news item. There was a new Metro game. It came from developer 4A's blog. Now our resident Metro fan, Mr. Benroy, he said that this was a few days ago, I didn't see anybody talking about a new Metro game.
And me and Benroy were, Scott Tilford. You just ignored all of our messages.
Where was this? Yeah, somewhere. Somewhere away from me when I was too busy talking about Ori and the Will of the Wisps. So apparently there's a new Metro game that came from developer 4A's blog. And they were celebrating the 10th anniversary of Metro 2033. And they said that for the new game, they want to use everything that they've learned from the last 15 years, and they're setting their sights even higher. The next title is being built for Gen 9 consoles and PC with a complete overhaul of the engine and renderer to take advantage of new power, storage, and hardware-supported ray tracing afforded by the new console. A bigger thing though is that they're going to try multiplayer. They said it's not set in stone, but they say, look, we're not looking to jump on some trend or bandwagon. As creators, we want to explore a multiplayer experience that makes complete sense in the Metro universe. We're committed to ensuring that whatever we do, it's not to the detriment of our single player ambitions. And then later on in the blog, it's almost like they walk it back because they know how crazy it sounds. They're like, none of these thoughts mean that the next Metro game will be multiplayer only, or that the next game will have single and multiplayer in the same package. We're still figuring everything out, but know that we are absolutely committed to more single player story driven experiences in the Metro universe. What's your thoughts on them? What do you want, a multiplayer Metro?
I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it if you had like a co-op mode in the main campaign, because to my knowledge, I haven't played the original 2 in a while, but obviously I played Exodus last year before, whenever that game came out.
I don't know.
But for the most part, I think that while you do have missions where you're, you know, on your own, you also have a wide cast of characters. Like in Exodus, you have a literal train full of other characters that you're bonding with that you could theoretically take out on these missions. So it's not too much of a stretch to have another player, you know, jump in the shoes of one of those people and kind of join you on a mission. That said, I love Metro Exodus in particular because you're in this wide open space. You're exploring this ravaged world, and it feels like a classic survival horror game in a lot of ways. It feels like, you know, I tried to compare it to Fallout, but if Fallout was taken like 100% seriously and was like a gritty thing, it feels like that. I had such a great time playing that last game, and, you know, the sense of immersion is so excellent. The fact that you have this very limited HUD, the fact that the visuals are so gorgeous, I just thought Man, I have fond memories of it, but all of the Metro games so far has just missed the mark of like
being so close.
Yeah, they're so close. And each one has, every time it solves a problem as a series, I feel like it opens up a new kind of wound. Mm. And it's just like, you are so close to being like amazing. You are so close to being the perfect post-apocalyptic game. Mm. Just there are things holding you back. A lot of times that comes with like the tech, you know, for as good as Exodus looked and for as big and ambitious it was, there was still like a lot of issues with bugs and glitches and stuff like that. And so hopefully they managed to solve those technical issues, those kind of issues with the, you know, game engine or mechanics or whatever, and deliver a Metro game that like finally patches up that framework properly and excels to the next level.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
One thing that I loved in Exodus is like, and it's very Far Cry. It's sort of, because obviously in Exodus you enter the surface for the first time, like extended periods of time, and you're exploring those little settlements and things like that. And I love that because I thought the game itself, like I loved all the like weapon crafting stuff and all the like really slow burn stealth infiltration stuff, and any wrong move and the whole base descends on you, and it's really intense. And like you can do a slow burn approach, like a more methodical approach to a Far Cry style settlement like infiltration thing, and I think that like can be their signature element if they wanted to make that co-op. So like I would love if they did like proximity based audio, like Phasmophobia style, and like two of you are just like infiltrating a place, and maybe you have to push a button to talk to each other, but if you do that next to a guard, it's going to alert them and things like that. Like I don't know how much that gets away from the through line like drive of a Metro game, but for me I got lost in those open world segments so much in Exodus, and like that would be the thing that you multiplayerize. It wouldn't be the corridor crawling story stuff, because two people aren't going to want to stand around and wait while characters talk to them. They're going to want to do missions together.
Yeah, it's what's going to be key, I think, with this decision is whether or not they expand on the open world elements. Because in Exodus, you had like a bunch of mini distinct kind of open areas that you could explore for, you know, resources and new weapons, stuff like that. And I wonder if they kind of like decide to double down on that, give us like a big open world. And I dread to say it, Scott Telford, but maybe go down like the games as service route where you're looking for...
if you say it, it'll happen.
I know. I shouldn't verbalize it because it might. I don't want it to happen, but I can. Part of me can see that happening. I hope it doesn't, and I think like the fans wouldn't be very kind to that happening. And I think the devs kind of in this series, especially, kind of try to play to what the fans want for the most part. But I'm imagining it, Scott, and the image won't go away is the problem.
The thing that I think we have to reckon with going into the next generation is that the word microtransactions isn't inherently evil. It is a way to monetize a set of developers. It is a way to monetize something going forward. It's just that term is so attached to the worst applications of it. Thanks to the likes of EA, 2K, Ubisoft, literally any big devs, they, you know, sort of dip their toes in the evil pond and then had to decide how far in they're going to go. But speaking of multiplayer, the next news thing, Cyberpunk 2077, CDPR or CD Projekt Red, during an earnings briefing, their CEO, it's Marcin Iwiński, was talking about the multiplayer expansion. And he said to think of it as its own independent production. He said that they're focusing on single player for now, but to expect multiplayer updates across quarter one, 2021. Said that Cyberpunk multiplayer, it's a separate dedicated production, a big production. We think about it as a standalone product. What do you think of Cyberpunk multiplayer? I tend to just not care that much about multiplayer unless it's focused on it from the beginning, like Call of Duty style, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what I think about Cyberpunk single player, never mind this one that doesn't technically exist that we've properly seen shown off yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what they could do to really pique my personal interest. You know what I mean? Like when it comes to the world of CD Projekt Red or whatever and the RPGs they create, it is the single player experience that I'm there for. It's not necessarily like a set of mechanics or a gameplay loop or anything like that. It's the story and more importantly, your role in the story. So to kind of potentially strip that out of a multiplayer experience, like, I don't know how I would jive with their games if it is just a kind of mechanical focus with you and other people or whatever. Maybe they managed to integrate the two, but in my experience, when developers try to say that they've got a multiplayer game that retains the story-driven approach of the single player, it just never works. Like, look at Anthem, look at Fallout 76. I'm not going to say that the Cyberpunk multiplayer mode is going to be an Anthem or a Fallout 76, but the history hasn't been kind to these kind of experiences, and I hope that devs of this caliber can pull off something interesting, but it's not something I'm personally kind of like putting all my eggs in the basket of.
One question for you. Did you play The Darkness's multiplayer, the Darkness game from 2007?
I did not.
Because that was one of the only examples of a game that didn't need multiplayer at all. But obviously, it's like in the boom of their second half of the 2000s when Call of Duty's taken off and like, oh, you know, not fiber wire, like broadband connections. And hey, we should have a multiplayer. And like The Darkness is the most single player focused driven. It's brilliant, that game. And then I remember just seeing the multiplayer option on the menu. And like, that was the most bare bones, point the camera at something and shoot it repeatedly for a deathmatch style multiplayer ever. And that's what I always think of whenever they like try and bolt a multiplayer onto something. I'm like, it's going to be like The Darkness. But I kind of wonder, like, you know, obviously with Cyberpunk, they've gone back and forth on how much of the overblown action stuff they're going to do. Initially, it was like you could hang off the walls, but they've taken that out. So like, you know, if they did a multiplayer mode, I guess I would just take it if it was straight up deathmatch and like the perks that you equip are the body mods and then you get different super jumps and, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I'm also like ridiculously skeptical that it could even be a thing because you'd have to focus on those gameplay mechanics.
I'd like to see more. I mean, I remember when The Last of Us came out and if someone said, you know, The Last of Us is going to have this killer multiplayer mode, I'd have gone, No, it's not. It's going to be terrible. Why would you do that? Why would you do such a thing?
At least not done Uncharted before then.
True, but even the Uncharted multiplayer modes, I personally never jived with, and I didn't think they were tacked on. I was just like, this is not what I'm here for. It's the same kind of thing. I'm not saying they're bad. It's just not the experience I was here for. But then obviously, The Last of Us came out, grounded mode. I forget what it's called, the multiplayer mode.
Factions,
yes, was like genuinely, you know, novel and awesome, and it played so well, and that changed my mind entirely. So all CD Projekt Red needs to do is create something on par with like Factions that can completely change my mind and kind of get into my head and say, Josh, stop being, you know, so biased against this. You do need this because it's very good. Yes. And obviously, I'm here for it. It's just something that I can't get excited about until I actually see it in the flesh.
Fair enough. I think, yeah, Cyberpunk is in such a weird place, man. Like, the last gameplay reveal that they did, I was like, okay, I care about this now because I have more context as to what the hell we're doing, why Johnny Silverhand is popping up, and all that kind of thing. But I kind of feel like the hype's kind of gotten away from them. I think at this stage, it's just going to be like, okay, what have you guys built? Let's actually just see what this is, as opposed to this version of the game that's kind of out there, where some people think it's Cyberpunk GTA and other people think that it's Skyrim with lasers. Like, it's somewhere in between, I think, but I guess we'll find out. Next news thing is from Crash Bandicoot 4. Apparently there's a new logo popping up at the beginning of the first level, which is at the very beginning of Crash 4. It's About Time. If you sit after you've beaten the game, if you sit and watch the TV that's as part of like Crash's sort of makeshift bedroom or where he's living, that TV now shows a completely new logo, which looks like a Wumpa. It's a Wumpa fruit with what looks like two kind of recycling arrows like circling each other behind it, which to my mind, because it's Activision, I think it's a microtransaction thing. I think they're putting some sort of microtransaction storefront in there that will let you buy the skins that you otherwise get for gems, because that's exactly what they did with Crash Team Racing. And I just don't see why they wouldn't. It's like they've you know, the reviews were great. Everyone loves it. They've probably crunched the data on how many people are managing to get enough gems for those costumes and gone, we can just do a storefront for it.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened already, because like you said, it did happen with Crash Team Racing, you know, relatively quick after launch. And I would have assumed that they'd have put that in already. The only thing that makes me think it might be like a new full game or DLC or something is because it's on that TV, because everything else on that TV, when you spin it at the beginning, is an older Crash game. I think it just cycles through the start menus for all of them. So that could be hinting towards something new. I hope it's something more substantial, because I bloody loved Crash 4. And it's I want to... keep saying, Josh, you're going to go back and like get all the gems and get 106%, and I probably won't ever, but I like that it's there to do as a project.
I had the same thought. I've got all the costumes apart from, and we can't swear at all. I was going to say we can't swear that much. We can't swear at all. But the flipping poppycocking heck of the last level, where you've got to chain all your powers together for that one final gauntlet, and it's like, oh, just beat that in less than three tries. And I'm like, no, I'll just delete you in one try and never, ever, ever come back to this again. I want more Crash, but I think if they put a economy into that game that lets you build up the coins or build up the fruits or whatever you need to buy those skins based on other goals, I would love that. But if the only way to get that really cool looking vampire skin or bat skin is is to cough up real world cash, then just burn it alive, to be honest, because it's just that's not good at all. Final news thing is Halo Infinite getting a battle royale mode, because of all the other things that should have happened by now, why not that, I guess. So this comes from comicbook.com, saying that according to one of their sources, Halo Infinite is getting a battle royale mode, but it is developed by a different team. Because 343 Industries were already asked about this earlier in 2020, and they said the only BR that they care about is battle rifle. The correct answer is assault rifle, but you know, not to worry, it divides the fandom. And has done for many years. But yeah, they're doing, someone else is apparently doing, I can't stop saying battle rifle now. Someone else is doing battle royale. And apparently it's going to be 120 frames a second. It's going to be free to play. And it's going to come in 2021. What do you think of all this?
Well, first off, Scott, that battle rifle quote has, like, I've laughed at that about five different times today, and the biggest pop came from you reading it out loud. I love the idea of some dev at 343 having that zinger sort of in their mind, just waiting and begging for someone to ask this question, and then being like, right, I get to use that, I get to deploy this quote that everyone will laugh at. But as a, like, an idea, I think we actually reported on this. Well, we didn't report on it.
It sounds like something we would do.
Yeah, about a report that, about a rumor, sorry, it's almost the end of the day, about a rumor that Halo was going to include a Battle Royale mode, because I remember everyone getting really annoyed at us for saying that, even though we were just the messengers.
And it makes not like them, sense. Is it? Not like them at all?
No, I don't want it, but it makes sense. Everything has a Battle Royale mode right now. I think they're too late to put one in, because we've already got our Battle Royale games, and in fact, I would argue that the entire subgenre is kind of not dwindling, but it's not at the height it was like 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, Warzone's obviously doing well. Apex Legends is doing well. Fortnite's doing well. PUBG's player base is kind of slowly going down. We've kind of plateaued when it comes to kind of like the peak of this subgenre. Not to say that, you know, these games are bad or failing or whatever, but it feels odd for Halo to be so late to the party. And if they are going to do a battle royale game or a mode or whatever, I would want it to be at least kind of inventive on you or have something that they can uniquely bring to the table. If it's the same gimmick of, you know, dropping in to this big place, you know, doing your regular loot, you know, to reviving people once per game or a couple of times per game at a certain area, I'd just be like, well, why did we wait so long for this? You know what I mean? Like, what have you got that you can offer?
Well, I think, I mean, the reason they waited so long is because I think they thought they'd have Halo Infinite out by now. And yeah, I think they're scrambling to put those fires out and going like, well, there's a really big fire extinguisher called Battle Royale that'll sort of put these out for a bit if you spray that left, right, and center for a few months. And at least people will talk about that for a bit. I don't know. It makes me think of the Halo 5 rec card system. I don't know if you played much of Halo 5's multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like they would roll that back in because they call it free. Obviously, they would call it free to play, but it would have the rec card stuff, and that would dictate what your drops could be once you're like in the game. And the thing that makes me think that they'll be super formulaic in regards to like how matches start and stuff like that is that they already have the drop troopers or whatever they're called, the dudes from like ODST that you see in like Halo 3 and everything. Like, I think they would go down the line of like, you know, the official Halo version of Battle Royale, and it's like, here's the official drop guy, like we predate all this, and it's like, yeah, but not really. And like, I don't know, I feel like one of the coolest things about Battle Royale, because I just don't play it as a genre anymore, I've had my time and I don't do it much, but I'll do a few games when something's new, and I love the gulag stuff in Modern Warfare, just such a cool little wrinkle into what Battle Royale is. But I don't know, I just don't trust, it's not 343 would obviously oversee it, I just don't trust the Halo IP to surprise me in that way when Halo Infinite is such a box ticking remember when it was good lads type approach.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of conflicted because at this point, I'm sure that Halo as a franchise has the ability to do something new and to surprise us. But when I view it as like, you know, a series now, I just view it as Halo. I view it as a set of mechanics and a set of stylistic kind of priorities that the series just can't break away from. So when I view Halo Battle Royale in my head, it's very kind of boilerplate. It's very by the numbers. And they might be able to do something interesting in you, but I can't visualize it. And that's a big problem. Even when Call of Duty announced Warzone, I could visualize how they could do Battle Royale because that, you know, that gameplay style of Modern Warfare is so crisp. It's so fluid. It's so kinetic. It's so beautiful. Like the animations in that game, the look of it is genuinely impressive, especially at that scale. And I could imagine how that game especially could improve on some of the flaws that I had with the genre, you know, like the jankiness, the kind of ugliness of the locations and stuff like that. And it did, it, in my opinion, improved in those specific areas and gave me something that I could latch onto that I couldn't in games like PUBG or H1Z1 or even Apex Legends to an extent. Then they brought in, like you said, the gulag stuff. So for me, that was like a great refinement of the battle royale genre. And I don't see Halo kind of being able to do the exact same thing. I hope it surprises me because Call of Duty, I guess, did in how much I ended up playing that and that kind of hooked me in. I hope it hooks me. And I hope it being free to play gives it a big audience and gives Halo Infinite this extra mode that we didn't know we needed, but then was really actually proper good. And 120 frames per second sounds awesome. You know, I'm sure it might look beautiful. I don't know. Craig.
Oh my God, right.
Craig the Goblin makes me think otherwise, but potentially.
Well, they would have to make Craig an unlockable skin. That's how they're going to get back in on that eventually. I was going to say with 120 frames, sometimes I can tell. Sometimes it looks the same as 60. And I know that sentiment is doing the rounds. But then sometimes I'll put a shooter on. I was playing the Halo Master Chief Collection at 120 and it was beautiful. So I think of all the genres that lend themselves to this, at least Halo could be all fully formed. Here's Battle Royale. Here's 120 frames, free to play and whatever. And maybe you get a free rec card pack to get you going. There's potential for it. I just think Halo is in the weirdest spot right now. But I do, overall, I feel like after Halo Infinite got delayed, I was going to say cancelled. No, it got delayed. In my mind, it pretty much got cancelled. They, you know, got back on there on Twitter and just said, look, we are doing the Master Chief Collection. It's going to be 120 frames a second. We're going to focus on this stuff. And I kind of feel like Microsoft or Xbox have just sort of taken a step back and gone like, what the hell are we doing with Halo? Like, it's our biggest tentpole release. There's a little mini Master Chief helmet inside every Xbox Series thing, S and X. Like, there's literally a Master Chief etched into the console for those who don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And I feel like they don't know what they're doing with Halo. So I think they sort of take a step back, get Joseph Staten back in, the original trilogy's creative director or scriptwriter. Lead writer is the phrase. and try and sort of rebuild it from the ground up. I guess, I don't know, as a final thing, do you have faith that they could bring Halo together? Because if their twin-pronged assault is Halo Infinite and Halo Battle Royale.
I've got to have faith, man. And that's not just because I'm wearing a shirt with George Michael on it. You know what I mean? I've got to believe that Microsoft...
I would have gone Bon Jovi, but I see what you did.
Yeah, of course. Very good. I've got to believe that Microsoft can save Halo. If they can't, then I can't have faith in Microsoft. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, Halo is this franchise that, for me, I've just completely lost my interest in over the past generation. But I want it to come back. I want it to be this thing that sits alongside, you know, like the big Microsoft IPs. If they can bring Gears back and do that really well, you know, after the original developers left. I know Ron Ferguson's still there and stuff, but, you know, after the original development team as a whole left, like, you can do it for Halo. There's so much potential there. There's so much scope about what you can do. And if you're going to have to do Battle Royale, at least do it interesting. If you're going to have to do Halo Infinite, make sure you get it right. And I am quite, you know, pleased that they did delay it, and they are hopefully going to get it right. They're going to put the time and money and effort and resources into making it right. Mm-hmm. So if it does fail now, Scott, this is like me cutting ties with it entirely. They've burnt me one too many times. If they take all this time and then it's pap.
The thing that got me back in was the Master Chief Collection. It took them literally like 4 years to get it right. But cross-game playlists is one of the best ideas ever. Like a quick game in Halo 1, a quick game in Halo 3, and then 4, and then back to 2, and then back to 3. Like, that's such a great playlist, like, to just enjoy all of Halo. And you can do campaign-specific playlists as well. Like, let's play all the big set-piece battles in a row from all the games. Like, stuff like that is such a great idea. And I feel like they barely advertise that stuff once they put it in the MCC. But still, for those wondering about Halo, if you have access to an Xbox console and you're not Josh Brown, who's is in the cupboard, I think, buried under mounds of clothes. If you have access to the Master Chief Collection, I totally recommend that. But yeah, that's been the week's news. We are the News Lads. This has been the News Lads. And I've been Scott Taylor, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye, Scott. A pleasure as always.
Yes, and we'll catch you guys next time. Bye-bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.